This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're going to talk about how the communist looks at government because Eric Holder's in the news. We're going to talk about the FBI. We have an FBI whistleblower here. We're going to talk to Carol Roth. We have a packed show tonight on I'm Right. It is hard for decent people, for good people, to understand how communists think and why communists say the things they say. It just is. You're a different species. A decent, normal person who wants the things you want is going to have a difficult time relating to a communist for the same reason they're going to have a difficult time relating to a lion on the Serengeti. It's just a different species. And so it's important we try to, as often as we can on this show, explain why they're saying the things they're saying. Because oftentimes, lots of the times, the right, normal people, decent people, you, me, we can get wrong. We'll hear them say something and we'll think, wow, what a hypocrite. That's a huge one. The right loves to say that about the communists. They're being hypocritical. How could he say that? That's so hypocritical. A great example of this is Barack Obama's infamous Attorney General Eric Holder, committed communist, America hater, Eric Holder. Eric Holder went on the news. He's talking about all this DOJ stuff. Now, before we get to Eric Holder, this DOJ stuff looks serious. I don't know whether anyone's going to go to prison. I'm not here to tell you that. I'm not here to get your hopes up. But it's very clear this task force is taking this Russia hoax stuff seriously. They're combing through records. They're talking about indictments. We'll get to that in a few. Eric Holder went on the news and he said this.
And this administration has used the Justice Department, has used the power, the investigatory power of the Justice Department to target political opponents of the president. I mean, you've seen Donald Trump talk about a whole range of things, most ridiculous, to talk about the possibility of indicting, prosecuting for treason, Barack Obama. I mean, you know, these are dangerous kinds of things that this president is talking about. And I'm really concerned that this Justice Department, under Bondi, under Patel, will do things that are inconsistent with the traditions of the department.
Now, this is where you—if you haven't seen that before—I don't—I already know what's going through your head right now. What? How could he? The DOJ under Joe Biden just did all that. They already politicized the whole thing. When they went after Donald Trump, how could he say that? What a hypocrite! Okay. Remember when Kamala Harris said this?
He will weaponize the Department of Justice against his political enemies.
Ooh.
Round up peaceful protesters and throw them out of our country.
Ooh.
And even, quote, terminate the United States Constitution.
You've got someone who has said that if he were back in office, he would weaponize the Department of Justice. Someone who has openly applauded insurrectionists as patriots. Someone who has said that they will go after their political enemies.
Again, it's very tempting to see things like that and say, what a hypocrite. That's hypocritical. That's what you guys are doing. Very tempting. But let's have a talk once again about communism itself. If you think of communism as a political ideology, a political stance, you can never and will never understand these people, why they think the way they think, why they say the things they say. It will always be beyond you. If you understand that it is a religion, communism makes way more sense. And it's not just that communism is a religion. It is one of those, and there have been and will always be many of those. It is one of those religions that does not share space with other religions. And look, I'm not going to indict this religion or that religion. Obviously, there are a million that could pop into your head. Islam is a great example. If you go to an Islamic country, and that is the law of the land, you will often find that over time, the Christians will be purged and removed from the country. Not all the time, but oftentimes. Jews, purged and removed from the country. Why is that? It's more of an exclusive religion where not only do they believe in only that, everything else has to be eliminated. That's exactly how communists think. They are not only the chief religion, all other religions should be purged. How does this pertain to what we're talking about here? When it comes to the forces of government, the FBI, DOJ, CIA, whatever, IRS, doesn't matter what it is. Eric Holder wasn't being hypocritical when he said, I'm worried they're going to use these things. In Eric Holder's mind, well, the DOJ should enforce the one true religion of the land. The DOJ, the FBI, the CIA, in Eric Holder's mind, in Kamala Harris's mind, in the mind of the communists, that should be their chief goal. It's not to hunt down child predators or secure the border or enforce the law. The communist never thinks about that. The whole point of these organizations should be to protect and move forward the communist revolution. He's not being hypocritical. He believes you should be thrown in a cage for being a Republican, and he also believes, he genuinely believes it, that it is an absolute outrage if you do the same thing to him for being a Democrat, because there should be only one religion in the government, his sick, demonic religion. And look, there's another part about what he just said. I'm going to rewind and ask Mr. Producer Matt to go ahead and bring this up again. There was another part of what he just said that is so revealing, and it should make all of us on the right, it should make all of us a little bit ashamed. This is what he said.
These are dangerous kinds of things that this president is talking about, and I'm really concerned that this Justice Department, under Bondi, under Patel, will do things that are inconsistent with the traditions of the department.
They'll do things that are inconsistent with the traditions of the department. That's an interesting way to put that, isn't it? What traditions would he be talking about? What traditions would Eric Holder have grown accustomed to, and now he sees those traditions being broken? Well, it's quite simple. It's this tradition. The tradition of the American left, of the American communist, is when they take power, government power, any power, but we're just going to make it about government for now. When they take government power, they view it as a vehicle to push forward the communist revolution, and they will use government power in every imaginable way, in every way they can possibly get away with until the courts or the public stop them. They will use government power against their political opponents. It's just how the communist thinks. Government power should be used. And they will violate every law without a second thought, every norm, you name it. That's what he thinks it should be used as. And what he's gotten used to is he will do that. He will take over. Joe Biden will take over the presidency. He'll open up the border. He'll sue to keep the border open. He'll import as many barbarians as humanly possible. He will send the DOJ, FBI after pro-lifers. He'll write down, he'll put domestic school board moms on the domestic terrorist list. You name it, he'll do the most horrible, evil, lawless things in the world. And in his mind, that's how it always operates, and we never respond in kind. That is the real tradition Eric Holder's talking about here. The American Democrat, the American communist, has gotten used to a system where he can operate like a rabid animal, and when the right takes over, we'll do the, well, what was it Bill Barr said? Not a tit for tat.
Those who broke the laws will be held to account. But this cannot be, and it will not be, a tit-for-tat exercise. We are not going to lower the standards just to achieve a result.
You may like the sound of that. You know who else loves it? The communist. We're not going to lower ourselves. We're going to be to a higher standard. We're better than that. Yep, the communist animals who abuse this country, abuse the law, abuse their government positions, they love that way of thinking. Because they know when they're in charge, they will loot the treasury, pillage the house. When we take over, we're not going to do a tit for tat. We certainly don't want to punish you guys. No punishment. Just let me clean things up. I wouldn't want to lower myself to your level. The communist has grown accustomed to that. It's the only way I've ever known America to operate in my 44 years on this planet. The animals go crazy. The right takes over and tries to be the adults. We're going to do it the right way. But all that does is encourage the communists to do worse and worse and worse things. And that's why, over the course of your life, no matter how old you are, you've watched them escalate, haven't you? Why is that? They'll do this under Jimmy Carter, and that's bad, right? But then the next time, we get Bill Clinton, and he does even more. But then after Bill Clinton, Barack Obama gets in 8 years, does even more. And then Joe Biden gets in, and it was just full-out communist dictatorship for 4 years. We had the American president threatening us with our jobs. Why are they only escalating? Because we are always above it. No tit for tat here. They always escalate because there's never a punishment for doing the horrible things they've done. And look, I don't want to get your hopes up or my hopes up, but when the director of the CIA, John Ratcliffe, goes on Fox News and says this, my hopes are getting up.
So what I think I hear you saying is there is still an opportunity for indictments, potential prosecutions, accountability from those people who may have lied under oath, like John Brennan, James Comey, and perhaps Hillary Clinton.
Well, that's why I've made the referrals that I have. DNI Gabbard has made referrals.
Yeah.
And why we're going to continue to share the intelligence that would support the ability of our Department of Justice to make fair and just bring fair and just claims against those who have perpetrated this hoax against the American people and this stain on our country.
Again, I want to reinforce something I've been telling you, something I'm going to repeat again and again. I don't know that somebody powerful is going to burn for all this. I know that they deserve it. I know that it is necessary. If nobody burns for all this, then we will have accelerated our end date as a nation. I really do mean that. The American people have had enough. They're sick of it. So I don't know that anyone's going to burn. I know they should. But I also know this. This appears, so far, to have a level of seriousness I have never seen before. When the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, when she gets a stack of declassified papers and walks into the Department of Justice, walks into Pam Bondi's desk and says, there's your crimes, prosecute. When the Director of the Central Intelligence Agency does the same thing, hey, I've made a referral, here's a stack of papers, I declassified them, prosecute. That sure sounds like they're taking it deadly serious. John Brennan's all over TV. I think he knows they're taking it seriously.
Tulsi Gabbard, you know, she may be impaired on the ethics front, certainly, but she's not impaired on the intellect front. And so I can only presume that she is doing this intentionally mischaracterizing, misrepresenting, and lying about what she has found.
John Brennan is already attempting, it looks like to me, to try his criminal case, Lord willing, in the public square. I would imagine that you will see John Brennan on TV for a while until his $2,000 an hour lawyers tell him to shut his freaking mouth. But from everything I'm hearing, I think John Brennan might be the low-hanging fruit in this whole thing. Enjoy your time on TV, John. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. One of those FBI whistleblowers, those brave souls, is about to join us in a moment. We'll talk about some things. Before we talk about some things, let me talk to you about putting your money where your morals are. It's not only government power the communists believe in using. They, on purpose, conquered corporate America because they saw all the money and power corporate America had. So they infiltrated the HR departments, the boardrooms, and soon you have the gigantic cell phone companies, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, tossing money out to every communist cause, your money out to every communist cause in the country. It's disgusting, and we feel powerless and angry, but that's why you should switch to Pure Talk, the patriotic mobile company. They don't do that with your money. You'll pay less, you keep your phone, you keep your number. It's the same towers, so you're not sacrificing service. There's no reason not to switch to Pure Talk. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The precedent has been set. I can show you Donald Trump's mugshot. The second the communists took power, they had Donald Trump arrested in every jurisdiction in the United States of America. They tried to blow his head off and send him to prison for 90 years. So don't tell me presidents, former presidents, are untouchable. No, sir. The president of the United States of America cooked the books on his orders of intelligence in order to create a false narrative about the incoming president who was about to be sworn in. He used the Central Intelligence Agency like it was the DNC. He used the FBI like it was the DNC. He used the DNI like it was the DNC, politicking with his office. That is a crime so severe, Barack Obama should never see the light of day again. He deserves a trial, a fair trial, a public trial, because that's what the American people deserve. And then he deserves to go to prison for the rest of his natural life. And not just because I hate him, but because the next time we get a scumbag like that in the Oval Office, he has to look at Barack Obama rotting in Fort Leavenworth and say to himself, well, I guess the CIA probably isn't my political arm, so maybe I should back off of that. This moment, I'm not just saying this for radio purposes, is everything for this.
Well, there's one thing to want it, and there's one thing for me to run my mouth on TV about it. It's another thing entirely to actually get it. And as I've explained, I'm a little jaded on that. Joining me now, my friend, somebody probably a little bit more jaded than I am, FBI whistleblower, co-host of the American Radicals podcast, Steve Friend. Okay, Steve, I'm not naive enough to think that Barack Obama's going to jail. I understand the way our country works, the way accountability works here, and I've explained that to people. But in your mind, is anyone?
Well, this is my tremendous concern here, because you just got to go back about 3 weeks to when the DOJ effectively punted on the Epstein question, when we had a fundamental question there, and it's outside of the even the abuse of children question, which should be abhorrent and disgusting to everyone. But the fundamental question there was, do we in fact have a two-tiered system of justice where the rest of us get held accountable for things we even didn't do if we took a guided tour through the Capitol, and the elite pedophile rapist can just do whatever they want to whoever they want, and the DOJ effectively voted present. So we didn't get that answer adjudicated. Now we have a second bite of the apple here, and my concern is perhaps this is an effort afoot by the Department of Justice, by the FBI, to get off the X, get out of the spotlight from the Epstein concerns. But what they've done now is paint themselves in another corner, because the same question exists. Do we have a two-tiered system of justice, and the onus is on the Department of Justice to provide us that answer and go forward with an effective and smooth and quick investigation? Because check your calendars here. It's already at the end of July 2025. We don't have the time to wait for years on end until a pharaoh who knows not Joseph is back in the White House and turning the FBI and his political enemies.
Okay, Steve, let's rewind and actually do this chronologically then. The Epstein stuff. What is your take on the overpromising and the underdelivering? I have a theory, and it's only a theory. I don't have any intel on this, that Trump knew his name was in there, whether it was added after the fact, which I believe, or not. Trump knew his name was in there. He knew something else was coming. He wanted to move people off of it and say, hey, drop this thing and let it go. But that's just my theory. What's your take?
I think that's a fair theory, and it's completely plausible, because we had a lame duck period after Donald Trump was elected president the second time, and we know for a fact from other whistleblowers like my buddy Garrett O'Boyle that there were documents being destroyed over at the FBI. Who's to say that they weren't manipulated? But I want to go back to what you mentioned about having promises, making promises of having a deliverable and then on a specific delivery date and not doing that. And it's not limited to just Epstein. We were promised information about the January 6th involvement from personnel at the FBI, about the January 5th/6th pipe bomber, about the Dobbs leak, about the White House cocaine. The list just seems to go on, and they're failing to deliver on these. And kind of come around to the belief that the word transparency is a code word for people on the GOP and the MAGA. I mean, the liberal and the Democrat and the communists, they like to use democracy. That's their code word for things I like. If you don't like what I like, you don't like democracy. My fear is that transparency has the exact same hold for the MAGA right in this country, where they claim to be transparent, but they're not really being transparent with what we want them to be. And that should be enormously concerning, because there will never be a time where they're in charge forever. This is the opportunity to actually turn this stuff over. And to the Epstein stuff, like, if Donald Trump is in fact on that list, or one of his buddies, or if there's foreign relations or intelligence purposes, whatever the justification is for not turning that information over, you have to end that justification with the following phrase: "So that's why I let the elite pedophile rapists go free." And you cannot sign me up for that culture or that country. I don't care if it destroys our culture. I don't care if it destroys our country. Our culture and our country deserve to go down the toilet bowl if that in fact is true.
Steve, would you explain, before we move back to the other subject, would you explain in a law enforcement, some kind of experience in this, is terms, why there's not an actual list for people? You know, we like to use that term, but there's boxes and boxes of files, but not a list.
Well, that would be a work product, a list. I mean, I don't think that Jeffrey Epstein kept a Rolodex where he said, these are the pedophile cohorts that I have, and I like to maintain this. This would be a work product that would be generated by investigators going through and looking and cataloging the video and the travel footage and conducting interviews and subpoenaing records, and it would be collected, and you would have a list of individuals who are of interest or potentially criminal masterminds or engaging in felonious activity. It would essentially be derivative of a proper investigation. It's not like any sort of black book existed, and if it did, he would possibly be the worst criminal of all time. I mean, you don't take notes of a criminal conspiracy unless you want to go to prison.
All right, let's switch back to the other big old mess on our hands. James Comey's catching a bunch of flack right now, and I mean, who knows whether he goes down or not, but it almost bothers me that it seems like Christopher Wray is missing all this stuff, as if he didn't have anything to do with any of it.
Christopher Wray, apparently he's Voldemort. We can't say his name anymore. And look, I just want to raise the concern that all of the whistleblowers who came forward during Joe Biden's administration were all complaining about events that were going on during the Christopher Wray tenure at the FBI, which leads me to a couple of different suspicions. When Kash Patel, Dan Bongino got into leadership, they were completely bubble wrapped and ensconced by people who were there and whispering sweet nothing to their ears, saying, "Let's go show you the James Comey room," because he was sort of outside the statute of limitations, not really grabbable. But Christopher Wray, we have radical traditional Catholic intelligence products. We have the January 6th abuses. We have parents at school board meetings being surveilled. All of this is at his feet, and he has lied, and provably so, perjured himself. I want his name out there, and he's just sort of evaded attention. I'm glad you brought it up.
Okay. The FBI, I know there are a lot of very evil people still working inside of that building. There's no question about it. Have we gotten rid of any of them? Have there been any positive reforms? Have you seen anything good coming from inside of that building? Please tell me yes.
Well, when it comes to the personnel matters, they certainly have gone the exact opposite direction of what I was like to see. And that would be the promotion of Steven Jensen, who was the effective warlord of January 6th, the section chief of the domestic terrorism operations section. He architected how the FBI did that entire thing. He's been promoted multiple times. He's now the assistant director in charge of the Washington field office. I have it on good authority he's actually going to be promoted again back into headquarters situation. Brian Driscoll, who was the acting director before Kash Patel took the helm, who refused to hand over the list of personnel who were involved, inappropriately so, with January 6th to the Department of Justice, he's been promoted. Spencer Evans, who went after personnel who refused to get the experimental gene juice jabbed into their arm, he's been promoted and moved over to headquarters. So this list continues to grow. It's tremendously concerning. And I can only throw it back to the most benign and innocent reason for that is, and I think that there was an erroneous approach as it came to leadership when Cash and Dan got in there, and they went in trying to win hearts and minds with the presupposition falsely that a lot of good men and women work at the FBI and they just need to be restored to rigorous obedience to the Constitution. But unfortunately, they've been weighed, measured, and found wanting in that regard, and they just stood by and just followed orders. And they are the snakes behind the scenes that are effectively getting those guys distracted from their job of delivering on the mandate the American people sent last November of wanting this agency brought to heel and completely de-weaponized.
Steve, Pam Bondi, I know that she's been a disappointment, to put it mildly, so far, but do we think that she has what it takes to take down a powerful a John Brennan, a James Comey? Does she have what it takes?
Well, she already passed on the Epstein stuff 3 weeks ago. I don't think she gets a second bite of the apple here, particularly because it involves her boss, the President of the United States, and the fact that the Department of Justice and the Intelligence Committee tried to run a coup against his first presidency. This is her opportunity, and it cannot be, we're going to bring on a special prosecutor. We're going to drag this out to 2029. At the end of the day, it'll be too late to do anything, because that's always how it is, just so conveniently. The American people deserve answers on this specific Russiagate matter, and they deserve them in a timely fashion, in a way that we can actually adjudicate justice and answer the question of, do we have this two-tier system of justice or not? And if the answer is yes, then she's atop an agency that is in charge of that two-tiered system, and that should be something that we are all fearful of, because you never know whose hands it's going to fall into next.
Steve, thank you, brother, as always. Donald Trump just dunked on the Brits to their face today, and it was friggin' awesome. It was hilarious. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, stop using old olive oil. I am well aware that you haven't put a second of thought into the kind of olive oil you use. I was the exact same way. I get it. You grab whatever bottles in the grocery store, you go home, you leave it on your counter for 10 years, and whenever you need some olive oil, you dump it in there and you never think about it. I understand that completely. Yeah, try one bottle fresh from a farm and you'll be mad at yourself. That's the best way I could describe it. I had no idea that much flavor could be added to food with fresh olive oil. All mine was always old. I mean, we're talking years old. It's years old when you buy it in the grocery store. At farmfresh246.com, fresh olive oil, fresh from a farm. They'll send you a $39 bottle free, so you can see what I'm talking about. You pay like a buck to cover the shipping. Farmfresh246.com. We'll be back. All right, let's discuss the hilarious meeting Trump had today with Keir Starmer, the PM of the UK. Now, I guess I should explain, because I'm only going to take a couple minutes here, why I like this so much. I view the United States of America as the beacon of freedom. I know that may sound cliche or something like that. I just do. We are not only the number one country in the world in every possible measure, we are a free country, relatively. We're a free country. And so that, in my mind, comes with a responsibility that we use our incredible power to spread that kind of freedom everywhere we can across the globe. And so, when an American president meets with a foreign leader, especially a foreign leader who is violating the freedoms, violating the rights of his people, I expect the American president to be that beacon of freedom and to talk to him about it. I like that the president is bold enough to sit down with the PM of the UK and say this on camera.
You discussed the importance of free speech today.
Well, free speech is very important. I don't know if you're referring to any place in particular. Perhaps they are, but
we've had free speech for a very, very long time here. Yeah. So we're very proud about that.
Well, what's your advice on the small...
Trump, not exactly Mr. Subtlety. I mean, I don't know which place you're talking about. And of course, they don't have free speech. You get thrown in jail for a Facebook post. That's not free speech. That's not freedom at all. And every time there's an evil communist, whether they have a British accent or not, they always sell their censorship efforts, their crushing of people's freedoms, as an effort to protect the people. And you really know they're selling it hard when they talk about protecting the kids.
There are new powers here to censor your site, state mandated powers.
To censor my site?
To censor your site and Twitter and Facebook. I mean truth. Is that okay?
Well, I don't think he's going to censor my site because I say only good things. Will you please uncensor my site?
Yeah, we're not censoring anyone. We've got some measures which are there to protect children.
Of course. We have there to protect children. Don't you want us to protect children? That's how they do it. But look, you heard me talk like this before, a few months ago when the J.D. Vance went overseas. And look, you can dislike this all you want. You can say it's mean. You can say it's confrontational. This is what I want from the leaders of America.
Look, I said what I said, which is that we do have, of course, a special relationship with our friends in the U.K. and also with some of our European allies. But we also know that there have been infringements on free speech that actually affect not just the British, of course, what the British do in their own country is up to them, but also affect American technology companies and, by extension, American citizens. So that is something that we'll talk about today at lunch.
Well, we've had free speech for a very, very long time in the United Kingdom, and it will last for a very, very long time.
Well done. Look, you want to feel strong enough and bold enough to have those conversations? That's why you need chalk. Been telling you, fellas. Get your T levels up. Your T levels are down 50%. At least America's are. 50%. We've lost 50% of our testosterone in the last 50 years. Why are we a bunch of effeminate males now? Because we don't have testosterone. So handle that problem naturally. Skip the clinic on the corner. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk will change your life. I get emails from guys in their 70s telling me their doctor is floored by their energy, their blood work. How did you do this? Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Try 3 months. Give it 3 months. Cancel your subscription if you don't feel better. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay, so what's the nitty-gritty on what happened today with the EU? What even is the EU? What's with these 15% tariffs? I don't know any of these questions. I don't have to. That's why I know Carol Roth. Joining me now, two-time New York Times best-selling author. I'm not going to talk about that. Carol Roth, also recovering investment banker. Carol, what just happened with the EU today besides Donald Trump dunking on Starmer on camera? There was something tangible that happened. What was it?
Well, of course, anytime you hear something from Donald Trump, it's very exciting and it's the best thing ever. And so we got what is in reality the framework of a possible trade deal. Now, it's interesting. We like to celebrate these things, and certainly I will celebrate that things are not escalating. The challenge is that we are the ones that started the escalation. So it's sort of like an arsonist burning down your house, putting out the fire and going, oh, look, I saved your house, and now we all need to celebrate. So we've created this problem, and now we seem to have potentially solved the problem, or at least have the framework to solve the problem, Jesse. And you know, the details sort of remain to be seen. What we've heard so far, I think, is a mixed bag. There are certainly some areas where it sounds like consumers and businesses in the U.S. are going to have 0% tariffs on things that they import, which is exciting. But there are other areas where that may go up to, as you mentioned, 15%. And given the fact that tariffs on imports previously were about 1.5% to 2%, that means in those particular areas that businesses and consumers could end up paying more. There are other areas that may be even more than that, and there are certain things that they haven't quite figured out yet. So, you know, the art of the deal continues on, but the good news, if you want to take away something to celebrate, is that it doesn't sound like it's going to get worse anytime soon.
Okay, Carol, let's zoom out for a minute on a much more macro level. We all know Donald Trump's feelings on China, on our manufacturing being in China, on buying things from our enemy. Everyone knows Trump talks about China. I got all that. Are Trump's trade deals that you see right now, do you think this isn't an effort to economically isolate China?
I think that there are probably a number of different competing interests, and I think it depends on the day of what it is that the Trump administration is trying to do. On one hand, they do want to isolate China, or China, as the case may be, and take away some of their economic power. That being said, that we are very, very dependent upon them, especially in critical areas where we do not have the ability today to make that conscious uncoupling, as it may be. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't go ahead and try to do that, and we should try to find other sources, but this is a long-term process. And so that's why there is this little bit of a dance back and forth, because we cannot completely decouple ourselves from China, or frankly, many other countries around the world meaningfully today without it impacting our economic and national security.
So much like Eric Swalwell, we shouldn't have coupled with China to begin with, but we did. So how long does it take now, Carol, or how long should it take to uncouple?
Well, you know, if it was a company, it would probably be a couple of years minimum for them to be able to do it, a big company. But it's a country, and we have all of this political theater and red tape that we need to get through. Plus, we have a changing over in Congress every couple of years, and at the White House level every 4 to 8 years. So it makes it very difficult, where China can think about decades or even in some cases centuries. For us, we have all of these shifts and changes that make it very difficult to execute a strategy. I was reading a piece of economic research over the weekend from Luke Grohman, and he said it very well, that America is very good at creating the narratives and the marketing and the announcements, but we aren't so great at execution. And unfortunately, execution is what is going to win the day. So, you know, if I were being an advisor here, I would certainly focus on the areas that are most critical, those things that impact our defense, our national security, things like pharmaceuticals, you know, really critical infrastructure areas. And I wouldn't worry about kind of all the other goods and services that, you know, there's always going to be some level of international trade on. So I think hopefully over time that's kind of how this plays out, but certainly for the short term, it's going to take a longer term to be able to sort this stuff out when it comes to the country level politics.
Okay, so that brings me to the actual individual, every person watching this. Grocery prices are still too high. The prices of everything are still too high, Carol. Realistically, are we going to see these things come down? I mean, I realize inflation shot through the roof under Joe Biden. It has not massively dropped so far. Will it? Can it?
So we talked about this a lot under the Biden administration, and inflation is a measure of growth. So when you have a slowing of the growth rate, it doesn't mean you have what's called deflation, which is prices going down. And I think that a lot of people are confused on that. We have seen that rate of growth certainly slow, but you're not going to find things that are cheaper because we're not having deflation. And that's also accompanied by a whole host of problems. So until people's wages start to catch up to these increases in the cost of living that we saw over the last 4 years, I think that Americans are going to feel a world of hurt. And my concern is, given our fiscal foundation, and particularly the mess that the Biden administration left us in terms of deficits to GDP, debt to GDP, and interest and so on, that any solution to try to tackle that is going to only reignite inflation down the road. So I do have concerns that we are not only going to see, you know, a shift in the short term where people are feeling relief, but it actually may get much worse before it gets better. But there are sort of no good options, so we need to pick the path with the least amount of pain, and it's still going to be painful.
Okay, so what about growing our way at least partially out of this mess? And I'm no moron. Well, actually I am, but I understand well enough that every time you get some big spending politician who doesn't want to cut spending at all, which is basically all of them, they all just say, well, we'll grow our way out of it. So that's the line the big spenders love to use. But Can we grow our way out of it?
So it's certainly possible, but it would take a lot of, you know, things to line up and happen that I don't see happening. We would need massive deregulation and, you know, tax cuts that are, you know, more significant than what we just codified. And given the fact that a lot of what we just codified, you know, existed previously, aren't really new tax cuts that are going to drive a lot of growth. I think that's one issue. If we had some sort of an productivity or energy miracle, let's say, you know, some kind of crazy development on the energy front, that's something that could really propel us forward quickly. But again, given our electrical grid, given our lack of workers in key areas like, you know, electricians and welders and things like that, given our regulatory environment, and given all of the bickering in Washington, I think that that's going to be harder to see happen. So we do need to continue to pound the table on growth and remove barriers. I would argue that having tariffs for a small business, things like that, put up more barriers. So if we want to grow our way out, we need to start getting rid of these things, not putting up more of them. But I don't think that that is going to work on its own. And certainly it can lessen the pain that we're talking about. But there's a possibility and a probability. When I tell you, Jesse, I'm not a betting woman. I'm not someone who likes to go to Vegas or anything. If I had the opportunity to take the bet and say we're going to see this energy miracle or something that helps us grow our way out of this, I'd put my money on saying, no, not going to happen.
Here was Trump and Jerome Powell last week.
Like, it's got a long way to go.
Yes, sir.
So,
Mr. President, are there things the chairman can say to you today that would make you back off some of the earlier criticism?
Well, I'd love him to lower interest rates. Other than that, what can I tell you?
Is he going to lower interest rates?
Well, first of all, I'm waiting for Trump to turn the Fed into a golf course and, you know, a hotel or something like that. I feel like when you see him walking with Powell through that office, you can see like the lights going off, like, ooh, I could see something really nice going on here. In terms of lowering interest rates, we do have a Fed meeting this week. And if you, at the beginning of the year, if you had said, hey, let's look to July, you know, what's the outlook for July? I think a lot of people were thinking that this is a meeting where you might see a rate cut. However, today, a couple days before that meeting, do not believe we are going to see a rate cut. And the Fed has been pretty good about telegraphing their intentions ahead of time. I don't think that they are going to surprise, which means now everybody's going to be looking to September. Part of the issue is actually good economic news, Jesse. We've had strong retail sales. We have fairly solid labor. We have the stock market, even though it's not exactly the economy, but still it's a measure that is looked at. It is hitting all-time highs every week. So it's very difficult for somebody to make the argument that Fed policy is holding back the economy when you're getting data like that. And I think that with that and the concerns over tariffs and what's ahead, unfortunately, the Fed is probably not going to cut. Now, personally, do I think that they could cut? I do. I think that they could take, you know, a full percent and that would not ignite inflation, and that they have a lot of room to maneuver given the history of where interest rates had been and how many businesses and consumers took down debt. I think it would actually probably be a little bit of a relief. But the expectation is that's probably not happening this week. And then we'll look for language to see what's going to happen in September.
I guess fingers crossed. Thank you, Carol. I appreciate it. We have an amazing light in the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And I'm going to do the best I can, as I always do, to be extremely nice here. But Rush Limbaugh had a great line. He had many of them. But he had such a great line where he said, politics is for ugly people. Or is Hollywood for ugly people? That's the line. Politics is Hollywood for ugly people. And obviously, it's a funny line. It's a true line. But I don't know that I've ever seen a better example of this than Eric Swalwell. And I'm not talking about his physical appearance, but Eric Swalwell, that dork congressman from California, the one who had an affair with a Chinese spy, the one who farted on camera, the one who repeatedly uses the most cringe, lame lines ever. He put out something this weekend, and honestly, the whole thing made me laugh. Here it was.
I should be working right now. I should be in Congress. I should be voting to lower your costs. But instead, I'm in a pool, because Republicans sent everyone home because they don't want to release the Epstein files. We could be working to lower your costs, make sure healthcare is affordable, and make sure we're restoring the rights of everyone in our community. I should be working right now. I should be working right now. I should be at the Capitol. I should be in a suit. Instead, Republicans sent us home because they would rather stand up for Donald Trump than release the Epstein files and stand up for victims. We could be at Washington, D.C., lowering your healthcare costs, lowering your grocery costs, and restoring your rights. I should be working right now. Instead, I'm pumping iron at the gym.
This is why, telling you right now, this is why the Chinese targeted him with the Chinese honeypot spy, because, look, you could see that Eric Swalwell is a massive nerd from across the Pacific Ocean. And this dork has probably been a dork his entire life and made fun of. And all of a sudden, you're at a bar one night and some hot Chinese chick comes up to you and you don't have a chance to say no. That's why. I'm telling you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.